Tu Sahaviryam Karavavahai Tejasvinavaditamastamavidvishavahai Om Shanti 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 Om Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shri Vasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare
Page 59. Hiranyakashipu was so powerful in the heavenly planets that all the demigods except Lord Brahma, Lord Shiva, and Lord Vishnu were forced to engage in his service. Indeed, they were afraid of being severely punished if they disobeyed him. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti has compared Hiranyakashipu to Maharaj Venu, who is also atheistic and scornful of the ritualistic ceremonies mentioned in the Vedas. Yet Maharaj Vena was afraid of some of the great sages such as Bhrigu, whereas Hiranyakashipu ruled in such a way that everyone feared him but Lord Vishnu, Lord Brahma, and Lord Shiva. Hiranyakashipu was so alert against being burnt to ashes by the anger of great sages like Bhrigu that by dint of austerity he surpassed their power and placed even them under his subordination. It appears that even in the higher planetary systems, to which people are promoted by pious activities, disturbances are created by asuras like Hiranyakashipu. No one in the three worlds can live in peace and prosperity without disturbance. So from this then we understand that everywhere in the material world is a problem. So there's not some place you can go get away and there's not some difficulty. You may change what kind of difficulty it is, and you may be more comfortable with that particular disturbance over another disturbance. You know, it's just like you live down here, then it's hot. You live up north, it's cold. So it's just which one bothers you least. You know what I'm saying? But something disturbing, that's always going to be there. There's not going to be any change. Because right? Whatever action you perform, then you get a result on that platform. So it's physical, you get a physical reaction. Emotional, you get that reaction. Intellectual, you get that reaction. You understand? Whatever is done, body, mind, words, whichever one is used improperly, you'll get the reaction there. Whichever one you use properly, you'll get the reaction there. Does that make sense? Narad Muni continued, O Maharaj Yudhishthira, descendant of Pandu, by dint of his personal power, Hiranyakashipu, being situated on the throne of King Indra, controlled the inhabitants of all the other planets. The two Gandharvas, Vishvavasu and Tumburu, I myself and the Vidyadharas, Apsaras and sages all offered prayers to him again and again, just to glorify him. Footnote 15. Srila Prabhupada points out, the Asuras sometimes become so powerful that they can engage even Narad Muni and similar devotees in the service. This does not mean that Narada was subordinate to Hiranyakashipu. Sometimes, however, it so happens in this material world that great personalities, even great devotees, can also be controlled by the Asuras. So he's just doing because, you know, that's what everyone else is doing. So it's you know, it's not a problem. Because being a devotee, they're humble, it doesn't disturb them. They're not there for enjoyment. Right? The demigods, they're there for enjoyment. For them, it's a disturbance. But for Narad Muni, whether he does like that or not, it doesn't matter to him. Because he's always in the mood of a servant. Being worshipped by sacrifices offered with great gifts by those who strictly followed the principles of Varna and Ashram, Hiranyakashipu, instead of offering shares of the oblations to the demigods, accepted them himself. As if in fear of Hiranyakashipu, the planet Earth, which consists of seven islands, delivered food grains without being plowed. Thus it resembles cows like the Surabhi of the spiritual world, or the comet Duga of heaven. The earth yielded sufficient food grains. The cow supplied abundant milk. and outer space is beautifully decorated with wonderful phenomena. By flowing of their waves, the various oceans of the universe, along with their tributaries, the rivers, which were compared to their wives, supplied various kinds of gems and jewels for Hiranyakashipu's use. These oceans were the oceans of salt water, sugarcane juice, wine, clarified butter, milk, yogurt, and sweet water. 14 through 17. Srila Prabhupada comments. The water of the seas and oceans of this planet, of which we have experience, are salty. But other planets within the universe contain oceans of sugarcane juice, liquor, ghee, milk, and sweet water. The rivers are figuratively described as wives of the ocean and seas because they glide down to the oceans and seas as tributaries, like the wives attached to their husbands. Modern scientists attempt excursions to other planets, but they have no information of how many different types of oceans and seas there are within the universe. According to their experience, the moon is full of dust, but this does not explain how it gives us soothing rays from a distance of millions of miles. As far as we are concerned, we follow the authority of Vyasa and Sukadeva Goswami, who describe the universal situation according to the Vedic literature. Right? So that's our position, is that as far as we're concerned, you know, the others may say this, but as far as we're concerned, we'll go with what Vyasadeva and the Acharyas have said. Scientists like it or not, people in general like it or not, what do we care? Because the point is it's about authority and understanding the principles that God's given. So since people's intelligence and senses are working by the grace of the Lord, how much He reveals is how much they know. So this idea is, no, I'm unlimited, I can do anything, I can. Where does that come from? That the sense of I is so great that they're thinking that, no, I'm in control of everything. But who's in control of everything? Right? How many scientists, you know, have you seen wear glasses? Right? You know what I'm saying? Yeah, that's a common thing. It's one of the things. Someone's a nerd, generally it means they're wearing glasses. Right? Why? Because they study so much and do this and that, that their eyes need some support. So the point is they're saying, no, if my senses, I can do whatever I want. But the point is their intelligence and their senses are all dependent upon the Lord. So they're limited in how much they can know, how much they can understand. Is that so? Therefore, this idea is that if they don't believe it, that doesn't mean it's wrong. Like that. That's all. You know, just like for the child. They just can't really accommodate or digest that they have to do their homework first, then they can play. You know? So does that mean it's wrong? You know? So that's the whole point is, people may say these things. See, we're only worried about dealing with the general populace that's comfortable to them as far as we're discussing Krishna consciousness. You use examples and wording and everything that they're comfortable with. But as far as their actual opinion on things, what's the importance? You know, we say, oh, but that's not very broad-minded. You bring me the people that say we're not broad-minded and see how broad-minded they are. You know what I'm saying? We can take them through, ask them questions, take that. You'll find they're just as non-broad-minded as anybody else. Just that they've identified a particular group of areas of accommodation, and if you accommodate that, you're broad-minded. But that's their definition. Others don't accept their definition. This makes sense. So that's the difficulties. Every conditioned group thinks that their group is the best.
Right? Modes of nature.
Yes, the modes of nature. So that's the whole thing. Whoever's not your community, you always have something to say about them, right? The same jokes are there in the whole world. It's just, who are they? Right? You know, if you're in Germany, it's the Polish. If you're in Poland, then it's another group. And it just goes on. So one Polish devotee was telling me that the Polish jokes, you know, so many Polish jokes, that they all come from this particular village in Poland. And in that village, they goof on anybody that's not from that village. So all those jokes that, you know, that, you know, how many, you know, poles it take to put in a light bulb, you know, that kind of stuff, you know. that kind of thing, that comes from those people. So the Polish jokes come from themselves, you know. So that's the thing. There, it's that, you know, anybody outside the village, you know, there, that's, you know, it's open season. So that's the thing. Every country, it'll be the one next to them, or the one above them, or below them, or a particular area, or same jokes, right?
Some are really chosen.
Sorry?
Some are really special chosen.
Yeah, that's another thing. That's the point. Is outside of that, then, you know, worked out. Yeah.
Well, his activity of preaching is of a Madhyam Bhakta, and he sees four principles: love for Krishna, etc., and disregards the envious.
Yes.
Sometimes this point appears to be, very often this point appears to be overlooked in dealing with the general public. The disregarding of the envious.
Yeah, because otherwise, what can you do with them? It's not that we have a problem with the envious. The problem is you can't do anything with them. So since the whole point of human life is to become Krishna conscious, the envious don't want to become Krishna conscious. So you leave them. Mm-hmm. And because the Krishna consciousness principle is what the universe is based on, then it's just a matter of lifetimes. At some point, they'll be in the innocent.
Yes.
Right? So it may be next lifetime, hundreds of lifetimes, millions of lifetimes at some point. So when they get to that point, then there'll be devotees there that can preach to them. So the whole idea is that since time is limited, then you save those you can. Just like in the, let's say on the battlefield, the medics, after a battle, then there's so many casualties on the battlefield. So the ones you can't, since it's like if you have enough time and enough people, you deal with everybody. But if you don't, you deal with those who have the best chance of survival.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Because if I deal with this man now, he'll survive, definitely. I deal with that person, he may not survive. And the other guy, he's not going to survive. You know, I could make things nicer for him, but the problem is that in spending time for him, the ones that could survive will die.
Yes.
So, since time is limited, you focus on those who something can be done. The envious, they don't want to be.
And if we alter the presentation to suit them,
envious. They're still envious. They're still not going to get any better. You know what I'm saying? We've made adjustments, and you only hear certain preachers who are out making new devotees. Because they speak, you know, the standard philosophy, but in wording and that they understand. So it's not that you adjust everything, people come.
Mm-hmm.
You know, people join the LA temple because the altar was made out of onyx or something. You know, I gotta join that place. Right? So that's the whole thing is that, oh wow, they wear karmic clothes. I gotta join these guys. You know, but everybody else is wearing karmic clothes. What's the special one? So the whole thing is the philosophy. We put it all down to, we have to adjust all the cultural things to them and make presentations like that. There's millions of people like that. Why come to us?
Yes.
It's the philosophy that's special. And if that's understood and that's appreciated, then people, if you know, it suits the occasion, will adjust. Does that make sense? And when Prabhupada said cultural revolution, then you would have to start with some. You know, that famous thing with Mahatma Gandhi. You know? Said, what about Western culture? He said, that would be a good idea. You know, and that was back in the, you know, 40s, you know, back then. You know, when we would say people had more culture and stuff. You know, so the point is cultural revolution means you're bringing about a revolution in their culture. And we're saying, no, don't bother their culture. So where's the change going to come? So, you know, it's just like, let me say, where's the effectiveness? So, those who are interested, Prabhupada says, you're selling diamonds, only a few people come. Like that. So, that's the thing. We're saying, no, that mission is only successful if we're selling really really cheap mass-produced glass. You know, then we'll be successful. I was a Christian. Look at them. There's 2 billion of them. They're successful. Are they successful?
No.
How many of those 2 billion Jesus would be feel this person is serious?
Maybe a few.
Yeah, so that's the whole point, is that what's the point? Mass and numbers is for who? That's the whole point. Brahmins and Kshatriyas, they're worried about quality and real substance on Shastra, on knowledge, on effectiveness and influence. And the others, it's money and numbers. And so, how is that Brahminical culture? How is that uplifting? So, since when do we preach bourgeois culture? And even that, we're not getting into that, because at least the bourgeois is rich. Yes.
On what you're saying, there seems to be, like, if you bring this up with devotees, they say that, Mahaprabhu wanted the name in every town and village. And
yeah, but every town and village how?
Yeah.
As pure Shuddha Nam? Or not as Shuddha Nam?
Mm-hmm.
Every town and village, it says they're in a village.
Yeah.
It's just like, okay, do we have a presence in London? Okay? How many people in London are chanting Hare Krishna?
I don't
know. Right? You know, some thousands.
Mm-hmm.
How many people live in London? Right? Some millions. So, that's every town and village. You know what I'm saying? And the person is saying every town and village, have they even left their town or village?
The thing is, he wanted them to be devotees, not just chant at once and then finish.
Yes, of course. But my point is they're saying every town and village, and so where have they been?
Yeah, but it just seems like a superficial thing to even say that.
That's, yes, of course. No, but that's my point. Is that where?
I know, I'm agreeing with you.
Okay. These authorities differ from modern scientists who conclude from their imperfect sensual experience that only this planet is inhabited by living beings, whereas the other planets are all vacant or full of dust. Right? So Prabhupada had no qualms about contradicting the modern intellectual pattern of thought, whether it's modern philosophers, modern scientists, modern academics. Like that. It didn't matter. The point is there is the absolute truth. That's what must be known. Because we're talking about the soul. We put too much emphasis on the conditioning, then we lose the point. If we put it only on the soul, we lose the point, right? The karmis put it on the conditioning, the jnanis put it on the soul only. The bhakti means that the soul is engaging their nature in Krishna's service. But if you don't know what the nature is, you don't know what is service, how do you engage it? Yes.
So we see that some devotees easily accept Shastra and they have no doubts.
Right.
And others, like this, the moon issue.
Right, right.
It's like it really bothers people.
Yes, yes.
So what would be the difference?
Sukriti. It's just less piety. That's the basic principle. You know, so in other words, those who accept are they've had more exposure to the Sukriti. You know, more contact with devotees, devotional service and all that. Those that have that have less. They have more faith in the material. But in the modern context, since it's all about speculation and that, then it will be seen as the opposite. That's how we know we're dealing with the mode of ignorance. There's no, but then that's narrow-minded, this is broad-minded and all that. But the whole point is if you're, as we were saying before, if you're being actually scientific, it is a possibility. Because they say, no, they went to the moon. How do you know they went to the moon? You read it in the newspaper. You heard it on a talk show. You know what I'm saying? And stuff like that. It says, have you ever seen? You know, how do we know that, you know, the little world we're in isn't the Truman Show? You know what I'm saying? You know, they say there's all these people. How do we know that, you know, all these big leaders of the countries aren't hired actors? It's being, you know, it's going on down at the, what do you call it? You know, all the extension of the, forget what it was, you know, I think it's in L.A. There's this one group, it's all comedians, they all get together and just do stuff there, and it's just an expansion of their, you know, the, never heard of that one. It's kind of where all the big comedians, they all come out of there. It's got, you know, that's where you can go and get known, like that. So, you know, how do we know that it's not? How do we know that all these things aren't, you know, some big political plot? How do we, you know? So the whole point is we don't know. So there has to be faith. So the point is, you apply your faith. So do you do it in the senses, or do you do it in actual authority? So those who can have that, then they have more piety. One may say that that's not fair to say, but then what do the sons of Krishna say about the particular son or sons that are sitting on Krishna's lap? Right? Because he has 10 sons. So how many can sit on his lap at once? You know? Yeah. So then that's the whole point, is that the other sons will be saying, what great piety they've done that they can sit on the Lord's lap. Right. So that's the whole point, is their commitment to devotional service is not as great. Therefore, they're not advancing in that area. Maybe other areas they are, and they advance nicely, but in this area they're not applying. So that's the thing about devotional service, since it's the nine processes engaging all the senses, mind, intelligence, false ego. Wherever you apply it, you get benefit there. Where you don't apply it, then that area doesn't advance. You know, it's like the mind may be thinking of Krishna, but you haven't worked on your false ego. So you are advancing and nicely in there, but you're very proud of your advancement. So at some point it'll create an obstacle. You know, so that's the whole point of anartha nivritti, is how to remove those. You know, like sometimes it'll be said, oh, a person is, you know, advanced devotee and he's attached to material facilities. So he can't be advanced. They'll put him in the same category as the neophyte. But the whole point is, according to anartha nivritti, that's tarangarangini. Mm-hmm. Because of their advancement, all material facility has come. Being in that, then they get attached to that. Well, the other person is working hard to get it and not get it. So it appears, you know, he's attached, so they only see that. But what they don't see, the difference is the one has, the other one doesn't. Why does the one not have and the other one has? We can't see the difference in that. Or are the neophytes having so much trouble, you know, in being steady in Krishna consciousness, and this person more advanced is having problems? But they can't see is the one is just, you know, how you say, thick thin, and the other one is war with Maya. You understand? They're two different places. The one is just, they wake up in the morning and the modes and that, like that, they're more fired up. The next day they're less fired up. So it's like this one, they're fighting with Maya, and because it's a fight with Maya, then there'll be some troubles. You know? Does that make sense? Or you take the thick thin, is okay, he's fired up today, he's not, and he's got, and then this devotee, he's supposed to be advanced, and sometimes is steady in different things, you know, he gets up in the morning, sometimes not, sometimes, but he's at the fifth stage, where he's fixed always in Krishna consciousness, but his determination in following a particular sadhana sometimes works, sometimes doesn't. You understand? You know, or you make the problem, the third one, where you can't tell the difference, or you can't decide. You know, it's like, you know, the scriptures, you know, mention renunciation, detachment from that. That's the thing. So, you know, we should go in that direction. But at the same time, you also see nice examples like Priyavrata and others. They were householders and engaging everything in Krishna's service. And so they waver there. So you couldn't mistake that as, you know, that's very modern and everything like that. So they're very intellectual and things like that. You know what I'm saying? So the difficulty is if the science is not known and then applied, and then by Krishna's grace you can understand something. Otherwise, one can make so many mistakes. Does that make sense? Yes.
The Sukriti, to have this faith in the Vedas, does that come from hearing from those who possess the faith themselves?
Basically. It means you get faith from devotees. It means sadhu sangha is what generates the Sukriti that you get faith. So then that area will be weak.
Maharaj, I think we're all indebted to you for faith in the Vedas. We see your absolute conviction.
That's because you see here Prabhupada's saying that. So we're just trying to do that. Okay. Mm-hmm. Yes?
When we're talking about determination and faith, it just reminds me of the story of Mauritian frogs.
Mauritian frogs. Oh, frogs. Okay. Yeah,
because we're living in the society of devotees, but there are a lot of like different devotees that we can associate with. And I've seen, like, I've heard a lot of devotees like telling me that they've been changing communities around Russia so many times because they couldn't find a place. And because, and then they came to Mayapur and they're like, everywhere the problems are the same.
Because they're thinking that there'll be a perfection in the material world. See, it's like, let us say I'm doing whatever I do, and so therefore I go through life, I'm not going to notice. Okay, that's different, but I'm just doing what I'm doing. That's more the kind of mudha mentality, right? Mm-hmm. Now, if I somehow or another become exposed to and in some way become inspired by an ideal, mm-hmm. right? Because when we're talking about these things, there's the activities, but there's the qualities. So when we come to the point of the qualities, then they're good, right? So then, because they're higher, they're finer and all that, many times we make the mistake that that's what's spiritual. But the good qualities aren't spiritual, right? They're just the best tools to engage in the Lord's service, because you're going to have knowledge and have a technique, but you also have to have the qualities. You understand? So, because you're going to be using the intelligence, you're going to be using the mind, you're going to be using the senses. Senses are your technique, your skills. Right? Your mind's going to be your qualities. Does that make sense? You know? Intelligence, your knowledge, like this. So, that's combined. Yes? No?
Yeah.
Okay. So, then, because it is higher than what we're used to, it can be mistaken that it itself is automatically spiritual. Right? But it's those being engaged in the Lord's service that makes it spiritual, just like knowledge only engaged in the Lord's service is spiritual, or the senses engaged are only, then they're spiritual. Right? So, because it's a higher principle, then we become inspired by it, and then being inspired by it, then we think, yes, this is what everybody should be doing. And on one level, yes, it's true. But how are they going to be on that level? It's only through devotional service. So in other words, then to put it into a more proper perspective, then we would say that this particular individual went around the world from hospital to hospital to hospital to hospital, and he was really, really disturbed and, what do you call it, you know, losing their faith and, you know,
disillusioned
because everyone in the hospital is sick. What's this? Even the doctors get sick. What kind of place is this? I want that place where everyone is perfect. They don't have any problems. No health problems. Everybody's rich. Everyone's beautiful. Everyone's famous and all that. In other words, why isn't this place like the heavenly planets? Because, hey, the other guy with the beard says, heaven on earth, goodwill to men. What the hell is going on here? You understand? So the whole point is that things in the material world are the way they are. People have good qualities. Maybe they use it for Krishna, maybe they don't. But when they're talking, oh, everyone should be nice, everyone should be good, that's not connected to Krishna.
Mm-hmm.
And unless they have conditionally are nice and good, then they won't have them. So only by devotional service could someone who by karma isn't nice and good could become nice and good.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense? So the whole point is that bottom line is, okay, let us say you go into any of those, he goes around Russia to community, but if he actually just lived there and he was a karmi, how many of those devotees would he actually be friends with? Hardly any. So, therefore, instead of looking at it from the negative, why is it not, okay, let's say there's two or three. We're just being nice here, right? Two or three. Then that's the conditioning that's going to have the good and nice just generically without devotional service. Everybody else, it's only through devotional service they would develop those good qualities. Right? So, instead of looking at it from the negative, oh, no one's like this and that, what's going on in society, it's a matter of, you know, wow. So many people from so many backgrounds and that are way beyond my pay grade to interact with. They're attracted to Krishna consciousness. This is the universal principle. You understand? We have you take this community here. There's 5,000 devotees here registered. 5,000. But you don't know because two or more are Bengalis and no one's ever seen them, though they're here every day and like that. But nobody notices that. Right? Because you just think they're just local. You know, the guests, like that. There's 2,000 Bengalis that live here all the time. Right? And 3,000, you know, international, that some live here most of the time, some come and go, like that. Okay. Now, out of that, how many people does any one person in the community actually spend time with? You understand? Like that. So that's the whole point. They're going to associate with those that have a similar nature anyway. So wherever you go, there'll only be two, three people. They'll look at, no, everybody will be fabulous and all be wonderful and they'll all love me and all be doing all this. But it's all about themselves. It's not about the community, it's about themselves. Otherwise, why be so critical? Why not fit in? No, but it's no, the community has to fit in to adjust to me. Not that I'll adjust to the community. And even if he says that they should adjust, what has he done to deserve it? Oh, I was nice to that guy? Okay, that was once. And then you expect eternal rewards for one time? You understand? So that's the problem is if we shift to the modern kind of thing, then it's all about ourselves. You understand? It's all about ourselves. And then, how do you create community when it's all about yourself? So, therefore, if how you are into yourself, you find a few other individuals who are into themselves in exactly the same way or close enough, you'll call them friends. That's the modern standard of friendship. Well, if you look up the word community, it means who has common values. Yeah? So the point is he says that, but where are the values that are common? So that's the whole thing. So the only values that can be common universally is pure devotional service. And if they're trying to take anything else, then it'll fail. It will be regionalized.
Regionalized.
Mm-hmm. Means there's a region.
Yeah.
It'll be according to that. Who's from that area? Like, you know, are the Russians hanging out with those who speak Swahili? No.
Provincial.
Yeah, provincial. That would be the better. Provincial. Okay.
You said that Srila Prabhupada, he didn't he was not afraid of confrontation.
Yes.
Opposing the, yes. the scientists and everything.
Yes.
But I'm not talking about him now, I'm talking about us.
Okay.
Because of the specific background we all came from, mostly, the first generation.
Okay.
We do kind of think the way, not the scientists, but common people think.
Yes.
So for us to adopt the same way that Harvard preached, sometimes it's very difficult because of the condition.
No, but it's the mood that is important.
Mood would be devotional service.
Yes. In other words, that faith that what the Acharyas said, that is correct. Right? Because now in these other things, okay, Priyavrata, what community is he from? Yes. And but I'm saying he's from the great personalities are there, you know. And so then he's acting within that community. Right? So everybody up to now is working within their community. Now we're getting to... So, but within that, we started to break down that it's not about the morality, it's not about the sense gratification, it's not even about the form of worshipping the Lord, but it's about the attitude of devotion towards the Lord. Because otherwise, Daksha offered perfect prayers, they're great prayers. And we even see here, the points that Hiranyakashipu makes are really good. But now what's the difference here? This is the first time we're meeting somebody who they're from one community, but they're acting in another. They're from the Asuric background, but they're acting as a demigod. So that takes even more faith, more surrender. So it's tightening the position of devotional service that nothing is matters. So the point is that we come from these various backgrounds, so therefore there'll naturally be strengths and weaknesses in certain areas. You know, like I know, like before when it was all about, you know, the brahmacharyas and this and that, and, you know, women, this and that. So I know one devotee, he was so focused on that, he was so good on that, you know. But then later if you check out, he was gay, so of course he didn't have any interest in ladies and all that, you know. So, hey, you know, you know. So... Yeah, but you know, it works. So he could be really strong and fixed and determined in this area like that, you know. So this whole thing, we'll have our strengths and weaknesses, but by devotional service then it will start to balance out. Because the point is this, whatever the conditioning, as we said, purified, it's always valuable. Any quality, once it's brought to its pure state, is a value. Any skill, any technique is a value. Like I mentioned, you know, about that butcher, and then he was the best barber I've ever seen, you know, like that. So it's you know, once it's purified, it comes to its natural state, and then there's no problem. So if we have that understanding that okay, if we're uncomfortable in this particular area now, and there are other areas that we could focus on, then that's okay. Then that's good. If there's nothing else, then okay, that area that we're not so comfortable with, that's what we have to deal with. Does that make sense? You know, and then as we get purified, then we see that we can broaden our areas. But that's the point of nature. Nature means that there'll always be the aspect that there's something that our nature is more natural with. So if we use those areas as our field of preaching and service, what's the problem? Right, you know, we don't hear of Mother Jashoda going out and, you know, throwing bale fruits around with the boys, you know. So it's not her area of service. So that's not a problem. But the problem is the faith that will come with time. Yes.
About the point of authority.
Authority.
Authority. Yes. It seems like to general things, for example, in Mahabharata, where you have more social relationships.
Right.
It's easier to accept the authority. But when you go for more refined points, like philosophy, logic, science, it seems that we have the tendency to be more skeptical. So my question is how to keep the faith, even going to this more refined point. Like the scientists, they consider all this knowledge of Mahabharata and the other epics as mythology, usually.
Yeah, but that's because, see, is you can see what you do. So, but what they speak is mythology, so they think everybody else, what they speak is mythology. Where's Lucy? You know, what does Lucy look like? You know, you find a bone, and then the next thing, they've constructed this whole thing, and you know, with hair on the face and everything like that. It's like, where'd that come from?
Imagination.
Yeah, it's all imagination. So they deal in myth. So then they think everybody else is myth. Just like the envious person thinks everyone is envious. The political person thinks everybody's political. The person into money thinks everybody's into money. Mm-hmm. So therefore, those who, you know, the mythological think that everybody else is into myth. So there's nothing you can do with it. That's why if you can deal, nice. If not, just avoid them. Why deal with clinical cases? You know, they're clinical mythologists, so, you know, why deal with them? It's not that we're not nice and pleasant, but we don't have to discuss anything further. Because their background is such that they're not supposed to have a conclusion. Facts they can say, but no conclusion. Like I even heard recently that something happened and, you know, our man in the wheelchair is now somehow or another accommodating the concept that maybe there is a Supreme. Like that. I'm not sure what happened to him. He ended up going down a set of stairs or something with no one holding on or something. But whatever it is, he's now kind of accommodating that. That's what I heard a few months ago, whether that's still true or not. You know, so the whole point is it's just, it doesn't why get involved? There's nothing to work with. Right? In other words, they're not scientific enough to be able to work with them. They're analytical on certain, you know, and mathematical, but the point is they're people. So when it comes to the people part, then no one on the planet can oppose the principle that those who are into quantum physics are people, persons. You know what I'm saying? They just, you know, anything to do with the mind in that, to them, doesn't exist. Because how do you quantify it? You know what I'm saying? So they're just unable to. You know, they work in their own degree, but the better they are at, the worse they are at these things. So why worry about it? Thing is if you can talk to an academic or an intellectual as a person, you'll get farther. But if you want to talk to them as an academic or a scientist, their school is that no, there can be no conclusion. So it's a waste of time. You know, it's like somebody who has the determination that, you know, we're not going to eat, then how do you discuss menus with them?
You know? Right, but it seems like when they are young, like child, they can absorb it very easily, this point of authority and all.
Because they're in a natural state.
How to keep that knowledge? How to keep this purity?
Because you explain everything. Like how many parents survive the why stage in children's life? That they actually just answer everything and take it to the all the way to the end. Most just say, you know, mommy's busy now, or daddy's got to go, you know, this, or, you know, don't be so, you know, don't be like this. You know what I'm saying? And so therefore, then why won't they change? You know, who wants the truth? Who wants to actually know? So the point is there's something to do and not do, but why? That has to be explained. Mm-hmm. When people understand why they should do something, you know, people, oh, we're devotees, what do we care about samskars? Well, this samskar here means that, you know, the child you have will be of a higher quality of nature. Okay, this samskaras to, you know, that the birth ceremony will, and the birth itself will go without any obstacles. This samskaras so that your child will actually have intelligence. This samskar so that, you know, according to the planetary systems, it will go nicely. This samskar is so that, that they actually are stable and steady and can actually live in one place. You know what I'm saying? Well, that's why we say we have 3,000 people here. 2,000 people are living here. And if you check back, they've probably been living here for the last, you know, 20, 30 years. You know, the grandchildren are born here. And the other group, we said the 3,000, how many of them can actually stay here? There's a few that can. But most of them, they come in, they go out, and how many communities they've been in? That one said, oh, we've been to this many communities. That's, they're thinking, I'm moving around. No, they cannot stay in one place. They don't have the samskar to stay in one place, even if they wanted to. So one of the samskars does that. One of them removes any impurity that might be there from the conditioning of their own parents. Are any of these bad? Are these things that parents would oppose? They would not want their children to have that? So then why are they saying, we don't care about these samskars? But at the same time, they'll have birthday parties and Christmas. So what is, why is that? Because of lack of knowledge, lack of exposure to the culture. So they don't know. In ignorance, they're saying these. And so all this, oh, we're devotees, we don't care, that's coming from ignorance. That's not coming from actual knowledge. Does that make sense? So therefore, if things are explained why they're there, why you wouldn't keep them? So that natural is there, you just have to bring to the point so it matures. You know what I'm saying? So they have a foundation of knowledge and then it matures. If they have a foundation that doesn't have knowledge, then when they come to maturity, they're going to be very mature in their lack of understanding. Mm-hmm. So all that's given in the modern society is technique. Mm-hmm. Why you should behave in a certain way, that is not even explained. It's just, you're not supposed to do that. Don't do that. Because if I say like this, don't do that. Why? Then I have to explain it. I don't have time. I don't have patience. But I say, you know, mommy doesn't like it. Okay, that's a reason. But now if that goes on and on and on, that's the only reason used, then it's all about you're bigger. What you like is what the smaller does. And so then you get a so-called quote-unquote adult that all they know, they're in their quote-unquote maturity, is they try to enforce their feelings and needs and opinions on everybody else around them. If they can do that, they'll say, oh, this is nice environment. This is a nice community. And if they can't do that, they move to the next one. Mm-hmm. You understand?
Yes.
So, according to the intellectuals that started the what do you call it? The Age of Enlightenment back in the late 17, early 1800s, then what we call adults are just spoiled big kids. But in the old cultures, old world, the Vedas, then kids are potential young adults. Very different approach, totally different approach, and totally different result. Therefore, you can have a 12-year-old who's quite mature in his understanding and dealings and everything. And then you have this successful, materialistic person that on the emotional platform, he's an 8-year-old. And not even a nice 8-year-old. I mean a bad 8-year-old. But because they're good in money and this and that, everybody thinks they're fabulous. You know? So in Varna, they develop in the modern culture. In ashram, and not developed at all. I mean, really, just not developed. Individuals, yes, but as a group, no. Yeah.
In the modern educational system, there's a systematic and intentional destruction of faith in anything beyond the senses.
Yes.
And possibly logic.
Yeah. Yeah. And also their method about question, discussion and all that. They don't really introduce it till I think it was seventh grade. Mm-hmm. But the problem is when do kids start asking questions?
Before they start school.
They start, before they start school. So when you get to first grade, you have a million questions. Name me the first grade teacher who's going to answer them.
Yeah.
So therefore, the modern system, though they say it's all about thinking and broad-minded discussion, it's all about squashing or quelling that inquisitiveness and just making you into another brick in the wall.
Yeah.
You know? Like that. And then when they get to that, okay, now let's put the chairs in a circle, now let's discuss. And it's so artificial.
First they remove the natural tendency.
They remove it, and then they try to bring in their artificial, and it never works.
Yes.
They can say, oh, no, but here, this great personality came out. That they would have been great anyway. If they hadn't gone to your school or gone to the modern thing, they would have been great anyway.
Potentially greater.
Yeah, potentially even greater. Like that. They wrote the national curriculum of the country. These two persons. They were originally working when they developed the curriculum. They developed it when they were teaching in the rural environment. And it was so effective that it became the national curriculum. I think even two countries. And so then they were, you know, kind of obliged to go around and work on, you know, around to see, show how others how to use it. And they found that those in the cities had much less comprehension of that than those in the country. Because of the natural and all that. The others were too much stuff. They couldn't, they had no attention. They couldn't focus at nothing. You know, but it's always thought in the modern that the city people are much better than the country people. Mm-hmm. Talk to country people, they're much more practical, down to earth. Mm-hmm. On the ashram side, they're much more cut through things. Oh, the city people can't do that. You know, but they're more sophisticated and all that, and so therefore the city country people just don't get involved. The thing is that the modern system is based on your below average city person. And if you're below that or above that, you got problems. You know, they try to address it with some of the streams and all that. You know, some schools do that, but then the problem is then you can only function intellectually if a person is in that stream. So socially you become dysfunctional.
Problematic.
Yeah. Because you never hear in any of the Vedic stories of gangs and stuff like this. You just don't hear about it. You hear about uncultured people and stuff like that.
We see, for example, in Finland, the teachers who teach the young children, they have a better salary than the other teachers.
Because they're smart. That's why their country is always within the top five in the world, and why America, England, and Australia are very far down on the food chain.
Can we say that in Vedic system also it's more important to give attention to the
It's more important to give attention to everybody. So that they're giving to the young kids, that's good. Now when those young kids start growing up and getting into the other ones, then they should be giving more there also. Point is education has to be focused on. So no matter who you're dealing with, you have to deal with them. Does that make sense? But the point is if teachers don't get very much, then you don't have, you're either they're so idealistic they stick with it, or they go and get another job.
Mm-hmm.
So only those who can't get another job, then they remain as teachers.
Mm-hmm.
So, but if you pay proper money, then your best people will come forward. Yeah, someone was explaining this to me the other day. Reading something. They were talking about when they were a kid, then the teachers were really highly qualified. Because there weren't any other areas they could go out in and get more money. So you had really, really intelligent people. Then when it kind of came up, you get into law, medicine, all these things like that. Oh, I think it was talking about women teachers. Because in those times, these areas weren't open. And so women that could be lawyers and doctors and all that, they were teachers. Because, you know, it's an intellectual field. But then, that doesn't pay much, and for the same endeavor and same like that, you could become a doctor and lawyer and get, you know, 10, 20, 100 times the amount of money. And so, then they all shifted over to there. Then what was left was only those ladies that couldn't do the other thing. So if more is pay, then more qualified people will remain. So the Vedic system is, one, it's for Brahmins, so they don't need anything. And then, as much as possible, you take care, so they're very satisfied. And so then you have your best. So it's, you know, you get what you pay for. People support it, it works. People don't support it, what do you want? You know, it's just like the temple's run by a person and they expect some good management. A good manager will step forward. If it's run by a committee and they do all things in meetings, then good managers will never even come around. They'll come to the temple, take darshan, do a little something, and go away. The same thing. Yes.
You were saying before about the children asking questions. So, if the mother's going to, or the parent are going to answer the questions, then they're going to have the patience and see the value in doing that. That's right. Going to be their nature to do that. So there are just people that just don't do that. And then with the other side, the training of devotees, it's like, I guess I'm trying to understand whose responsibility is that, because unless the person themselves sees the value, they're not going to do that. And what the who's supposed to, you know, engage them or encourage them, or I don't know, like, you can't force somebody to actually, you know, we're all here because we want to know these things.
Okay.
So how did Prabhupada actually envisage that? Because
that's what he talks about in his books.
Yeah, but people don't read the books, and
so then what can you do? The point is you can lead a horse to water, you can't make him drink.
Mm.
So you can do these things that people don't want to know, then they have many excuses how not to know. So there's nothing you can do about it.
But it seems like the majority of our society is made up of devotees who don't want to know.
The majority of the society is devotees who don't know, but if someone would tell them, they'd be happy to know. But they're not the vocal ones. It's a formula called the silent majority. So that means there's the loudmouth minority.
Right.
So the loudmouth minority tries to say that the modern way of thinking, and that's the actual thing, and that's how everybody thinks. You know what I'm saying? So therefore, the majority of people, because they don't get out there and say all these things, then, you know, okay, they bring up a doubt from that because they've heard it. It's easy to discuss it with them and move on. But if you bump into that, you know, 20% the loudmouth, then of course you can't do anything with them. You understand? So the point is if people teach, then they're willing to learn. But who's interested in teaching?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So unless it's a self-help seminar and you can charge for it, then who wants to do it?
Mm-hmm.
So in other words, nowadays teaching means money rather than teaching means a supraminical activity.
Yeah, because the temples are supposed to be centers of education.
Yeah, so the point is if they do that, people will learn.
Mm. Otherwise you have to make your own endeavor to come from
it. But if you want to know, it's there.
Yeah.
There's things to learn. But the point is if you don't want to know or don't know that you should know, then it'll just go on. So that's the thing, is if you can figure out ways to get people to know, then nice.
Yeah.
But the point is if it doesn't work, you can't be disturbed.
Yeah. And on the other side, it seems like, you know, these things come by nature, the desire to know and make the endeavor and see the value. So, are we not attracting those people, or like what's going on there?
That's another thing. Because how many can deal with somebody who wants to know?
Yeah, it's an empowered person.
You know, so therefore, then unless you can answer questions, then there's a problem.
Mm.
So that's the whole thing.
Yeah, it's disappointing.
So, but the point is if someone who wants to know about Krishna, they'll come in contact, they'll meet. You know, I've heard of devotees that they're there in their country and their city happens to have a temple. They never meet devotees because there's no interest at the time. Then they happen to be traveling around the world and in some other country of the world they bump into devotees and then they become a devotee over there. You know? Does that make sense? You know? So yeah. So it's when they're ready, they'll come.
It also depends on the approach to like the loud mouth majority and the silent majority. Sometimes you can also be like from the silent majority, but you're trying to be like trying to convey the message, but at the same time you realize that the person is saying, "Oh, what are you trying to prove?" And I'm like,
"So then, don't get involved." Okay. Point is, it's either effective or you don't get involved.
Preachers mean we're getting involved in the field that we're risking that people will not appreciate.
That's the risk. The Brahminical risk is you'll teach, people won't like it. Right? You know? Administratively, you're taking a political risk. Right? Business person is taking economic risk. You understand? You know, the common workers take an emotional risk. You understand? So everybody has the risk they can take. That's what defines the varna. So it's just the way it is. If it's, you know, we'll teach because everybody appreciates, then it won't work.
Further on that point, it's best to go into the, it's best to go where it's your most effective, right? So
yes.
More value than you go.
It means if you have an option to work in more effective areas, you take it.
Yeah.
And if you don't, then you work in whatever is the best with what you have. Narad Muni continued, "The valleys between the mountains became fields of pleasure for Hiranyakashipu, by whose influence all the trees and plants produced fruits and flowers profusely in all seasons. The qualities of pouring water, drying and burning, which are all qualities of the three departmental heads of the universe, namely Indra, Vayu and Agni, were all directed by Hiranyakashipu alone, without assistance from the demigods." Srila Prabhupada comments, "It is said in the beginning of Srimad Bhagavatam, Tejo Vari Maridam Yata Vinimayo, of Vinimayaha. This material world is conducted by fire, water, and earth." Interesting. So that means it's like the body. You know, there's the body itself and the universal body. It works on the same principle, the kapha and vata. "Which combine and take shape. Here it is mentioned that the three modes of nature, pitag gunan, act under the direction of different demigods. For example, King Indra is in charge of pouring water. The demigod Vayu controls the air and dries up the water. Whereas the demigod controlling fire burns everything. Hiranyakashipu, however, by dint of his austere performance of mystic yoga, became so powerful that he alone took charge of everything without assistance from the demigods." Narad Muni continued, "In spite of achieving the power to control in all directions, and in spite of enjoying all types of dear sense gratification as much as possible, Hiranyakashipu was dissatisfied because of instead of controlling his senses, he remained their servant." Right? So here's the example of taking it to extreme where you can control everything and have it exactly the way you want it, still one's dissatisfied.
Mm-hmm.
Like that. So there is no question of satisfying the senses. You can only engage them in the Lord's service. That's the only way that they'll be satisfied. Srila Prabhupada comments, "This is an example of a suric life.
Atheists can advance material and create an extremely comfortable situation for the senses. But because they are controlled by the senses, they cannot be satisfied. This is the effect of modern civilization. Materialists are very much advanced in enjoying money and women. Yet dissatisfaction prevails within human society because human society cannot be happy and peaceful without Krishna consciousness. As far as material sense gratification is concerned, materialists may go on increasing their enjoyment as far as they can imagine, but because people in such a material condition are servants of the senses, they cannot be satisfied. Hiranyakashipu is a vivid example of this dissatisfied state of humanity. Okay. So the principal point here is that the senses being engaged can never be satisfied. Only in connection to Krishna can they be satisfied. We see as a supporting point that's very interesting in here, which then supports the principle of the authority of the Vedas, of the Acharyas, is that Narad Muni, what he's talking about, trying to gain that control and enjoy the senses, what Prabhupada's talking about, and what's going on today, and we see Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati talks about it, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, the Goswamis talk about it, so that in all ages and all times, it always applies. So nothing said here is out of date. You understand? Yes?
If we feel strongly on that, that spiritual life, that material life, won't give you any satisfaction.
Yes.
But in life examples, we don't see many happy devotees also.
Where are they? No. But I'm saying, where are they situated?
Spiritual.
That's there. But I'm just saying, the point is according to time and space, where are those devotees?
Silent.
No. That's an activity.
Silent majority.
No, that's a social thing.
They're within
the material world. So. There's a limit to how happy you can be here in the material world. Right? And also you have the element that happiness is not something you can necessarily gauge. Like that. There's certain symptoms and this and that, but you can't always gauge. So the point is the material world, if you can keep it at neutral, you're doing good. In other words, the material world doesn't bother you. But we're looking at it that they'll be happy, not sad. But the Vedic standard is you're not happy, you're not sad. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? So that's the thing. So they're not elated in happiness, and they don't lament in distress. So therefore, that's how you tell that they're developed. Is that happiness and distress will come, but as they come and go, it just moves. But you'll see is that if one's less advanced, then happiness comes, then they're over the top about that for more time than the thing happened. Or distress comes, then lament for more times than it happened. That's how you tell the difference. Does that make sense? Because the material world isn't that great anyway. That's why then gravity is one of the principles. You see, these mature devotees, they're very grave, so you can't actually tell what their feelings are, because their connection to Krishna and those things, then they're very happy about that, but then that can't really be expressed either, because the happiness coming from that is so much greater than here, right, that then people will think that's strange. So either they'll kind of go sahajya, or they'll be put off. You know what I'm saying? They're more intellectual, they'll be put off, because nothing can be happy, right? You know, art house is the evidence. You know, it has to be a bad ending, otherwise, it can't be real. You know what I'm saying? And so, and then then you're more sentimental, then they'll pick that and won't catch the philosophy. And other aspects, it'll just be that emotions and feelings. So that's why even if they are happy, they kind of control it. So they'll just be sober, pleasant, nice, Is that? Yeah. So okay.
Okay. Yes. The example with I think Priyavata Maharaj was satisfied that he couldn't be satisfied in the material world.
That was Yayati. Yayati. Yes. Yes. So like that. You know, he gave it his best shot. You know, he, 1,000 years engaged in, you know, engaging your senses according to the rules, you know. And he's a king, so he'll have good facility. He's proper, he can follow all the rules, so he'll get a good, he's got the best chance of getting good results. And so having gotten those good results for 1,000 years, and his conclusion was, you can't be happy anyway. So then he went and gave his youth back to his son and took the old age and went to the forest. Because it's not really possible. So that's why Prabhupada defines comfortable as not uncomfortable. So according to one's particular conditioning, then what one would call comfortable and uncomfortable is different. You know, like that. Does that make sense? So that's why then you have the general principle, people following that, then you have all kinds of different manifestations of that. Or something, you know, like that. Yeah.
Yeah.
And you reminded me of the song that the singing was the word to make me happy. Yeah. No, yes. Okay. Did we read? Yes, we're on Nard Muni continuing. Nard Muni continued, Hiranyakashipu thus passed a long time being very much proud of his opulences and transgressing the laws and regulations mentioned in the authoritative Shastras. He was therefore subjected to a curse by the four Kumaras, who are great Brahmanas. Srila Prabhupada comments. There have been many instances in which demons, after achieving material opulences, have become extremely proud, so much so that they have transgressed the laws and regulations given in the authoritative Shastras. Hiranyakashipu acted in this way, as stated in Bhagavad Gita 16:23. Yashastra vidhim utsrijya vartate kama karata nasa siddhim avapnoti nasukam na param gatim. He who disregards scriptural injunctions and acts according to his own whims attains neither perfection nor happiness nor the supreme destination. Right? So that's why we don't follow the thing as, oh, you know, I don't, you know, it would feel like, well, what about you or all these different kinds of modern kind of things. Is that, no, there's rules there, they have to be followed. Who's following? A person. That's where the personal comes in. The person is applying themselves to the process. So if we define personal as simply, no, whatever I feel like it, then we're just saying, you know, how an animal deals, that is personal. And if you have someone who's more matured, educated, and cultured, that is impersonal. That's the modern, you know. And so animals will think like that, children will think like that. But adults know, unless you follow things, you don't get results. Therefore, now, kids... Do they? Are kids? I mean, I'm just taking a generic thing. Are kids happy? Right? They're playing. Are they getting anything done? No, nothing. I mean, like basically, absolutely nothing. In fact, everything you give them, they break. Probably even mentions that children always break their toys. It's just something they do. Right? So then the whole point is that, but from amongst children, everything's going perfectly. So if it's all about my feelings and that and your feelings and we're all just there and just, you know, working around so that we don't disturb each other's feelings and we had some interaction and everybody was happy and that we've actually successfully done something, that's a social group of children. Adults know there's rules to follow, efforts to make, and things to get done. Responsibility to take. It's not about my feelings and just that happening. So that's the difference between, you know, you could say old world and new world. Right? New world's all about the feelings. Old world, it's about feelings and accomplishing something. So you have to balance. Now it's feelings are there, accomplishment is lacking. Before it was that accomplishment is there, that means feelings have to be adjusted to balance. You know, and if it's just things getting done, no feelings, that's also a problem. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jai Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki, Jai Nitai Gaura.